Bhakti Vaibhava Ki
Jai.
Arantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki
Jai.
Giriraj Maharaj Ki
Jai.
Janita Gurpurman
Ki Jai.
So I handed out some of the exams last night. Some people were not here, so please remind me at the end of the class and I'll hand out the remaining exams for anyone who is here. And on the not next Monday and Tuesday, but the following Monday and Tuesday, we will have a break from the course. So that's on the 18th and 19th of June. There will be no Bhakti Vaibhava class for those 2 nights, 18th and 19th of June. Just so you remember. Okay, so what do we discuss so far in the this section, Ritra Suru.
It's only natural that one is attached to their body, yet with higher knowledge, one should be ready to give it up for the purpose of Krishna consciousness, for the purpose of teaching.
Any other points? Any other points?
Madhuchi and Dhritarashtra sacrificed and surrendered completely and showed an example as to how one should use everything for the higher purpose, higher cause. And sacrificing everything for higher purpose.
Anything
else? The devotee's life only in Krishna works.
Well, Krishna works through our karma. Anything else? Okay, so tonight we'll begin chapter 11. And we will finish chapter 11. So we'll go through the whole chapter. 27 verses. There's not so many purports. Okay. Chapter 11 is called Transcendental Qualities of Ritra
Sura. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, O King, Ritra Sura, the commander in chief of the demons, advised his lieutenants on the principles of religion, but the cowardly demoniac commanders intent upon fleeing the battlefield were so disturbed by fear that they could not accept his words. O King Pariksit, the demigods, taking advantage of a favorable opportunity presented by time, attacked the army of the demons from the rear and began driving away the demoniac soldiers, scattering them here and there, as if their army had no leader. Seeing the pitiable condition of his soldiers, Ritrasura, the best of the Asuras, who was called Indra Shatru, the enemy of Indra, was very much aggrieved. Unable to tolerate such reverses, He stopped and forcefully rebuked the demigods, speaking the following words in an angry mood. Then we'll go to the next one. After I read the verse. I'm sorry. O demigods, these demoniac soldiers have taken birth uselessly. Indeed, they have come from the bodies of their mothers exactly like stool. What is the benefit of the bodies of their mothers? What is the benefit of killing such enemies from behind while they are running in fear? One who considers himself a hero should not kill an enemy who is afraid of losing his life. Such killing is never glorious, nor can it promote one to the heavenly planets.
So that we both, both the demigods and the demoniac soldiers, because demons were running in fear of their lives, and the demigods were killing them from behind. The actions of both were abominable. When a fight takes place, the opposing parties must be prepared to fight like heroes. A hero never runs from the field of battle. He always fights face to face, determined to gain victory or lay down his life in the fight. That is heroic. Killing an enemy from behind is also inglorious. When an enemy turns back and runs in fear of his life, he should not be killed. This is the etiquette of military science. Pritrasura insulted the demonic soldiers by comparing them to the stool of the mother. Both stool and a cowardly son come from the abdomen of the mother, and Pritrasura said that there is no difference between them. A similar comparison was given by Tulsidasa, who commented that a son and urine both come from the same channel. In other words, semen and urine both come from the genitals, but semen produces a child, whereas urine produces nothing. Therefore, if a child is neither a hero nor a devotee, he is not a son but urine. Similarly, Chandakya Pandit also says, Kruta putrena jatena yona vidvana dharmika kanena sakshusha kimva sakshut paidavya kevalam. What is the use of a son who is neither glorious nor devoted to the Lord? Such a son is like a blind eye, which simply views pain but cannot help one see.
What are the points of interest? Any points?
There is own generals and the elements of things which we need to do.
Anything else?
So when we did third canto or the beginning, the Duryodhana, there was a lot of fight that time, of course, compared to Duryodhana to be an eye which will only cause pain more than.
So, if you remember back in the fourth canto, then during the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada wrote in one of the purports that devotees should be heroic in Krishna consciousness. In other words, devotees should become heroes in Krishna consciousness. As we said last night, Prabhupada said, we want Arjuna or we want no one. So this should be the mood of the devotees. You have to become heroic. Hero means that others will look up to you and they will get inspiration from you. So actually, Srila Prabhupada said that we need hundreds of thousands of gurus on the earth. Just like in ISKCON now, we have maybe 80 gurus or something like that. So, something like that. It's not very many. 80 is not enough for 7 billion human beings. So it means that many devotees have to become inspirational, and they have to become heroes in their own right. Just like one devotee was saying to me last night, that whenever devotees, they're asked to give class, then they always say, or quite often they say, I'm not qualified, I have no ability like that. But actually, that's not the mood of the devotee. The mood of the devotee is that he will take a risk for Krishna. And Prabhupada points this out. We have to take risk for Krishna. Otherwise, you can't advance in Krishna consciousness very rapidly unless you're willing to take a risk and come outside of your comfort zone. So the devotee has to be in that mood, that he is willing to become a hero in Krishna's service, which means he has to become an inspiration for others. Which means he has to do things which normally may not be so easy for him to do, but he has to challenge himself. And actually, that's a deeper sign of humility. Because if a devotee says, well, I can't give class because I'm not qualified, right? And he says, oh, you know, so he thinks it's like a sense of humility that I'm not qualified. But it's more humble to give the class and to do it on behalf of the disciplic session, on behalf of the spiritual master, and do some service. Because at this point in time, the earth is very materialistic. Unless devotees are willing to become gurus themselves, then people cannot be saved in this material world. So you have to become qualified. Otherwise, what are we all going to do? We're all just going to remain neophytes forever? Right? Everyone's just going to stay in the temple forever and just say, I'm not qualified, I'm not qualified. Is that what our movement is about? Just like Prabhu Vishnu Prabhu, he joined the temple after 3 days. Prabhupada said, now go and open a center. 3 days. Prabhupada said, go and open a center. So many devotees have been devotees for 10 years, they won't even give a Bhagavatam class. Not very courageous, is it? Oh, I'm not qualified, I'm not qualified. Then do something. Do something practical for Krishna's service. So become heroic. You see in this pastime, you see the nature of a Aryan. Prabhupada explains this in the very beginning of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says to Arjuna, you're not acting like an Aryan. An Aryan means a qualified person who is a member of the Vedic culture. It means a higher class person. Brahmana, Kshatriya, and Vaishya. They're meant to be qualified people. So an Aryan means someone who is qualified. Qualified people means they're very cultured and they're very selfless. You see, these days in Kali Yuga, it's hard to find people who have those kind of qualities. Generally, people will, just like
quite often people, they will not keep their word in Kali Yuga. You say something, you know, will you do this or can you do this like that? And they say, yes, I will do it. But then they change their word. They say, no, I cannot. Later on, they say, I cannot do it. Even it happened to me since I've been a devotee. You know, sometimes someone said, I will do something. And then later on, I came and they said, I never said that. But I heard them say it. they said it to me. Yeah, even devotees have said, yes, I will do that. But then I come later on, you know, maybe 6 months later, 1 year later, so I never said that. But it was said. So an Aryan is someone who keeps his word. An Aryan is someone who will always do the correct thing. That means that's a cultured civilization. Actually, in the Vedic culture, everyone would keep their vows, practically speaking. The vows were very important and were very powerful. Just like in the Vedic culture, there was no divorce. Because it was a cultured civilization. If you made a vow, you would keep the vow. That was the system. So, in a cultured world, in a cultured civilization, in a cultured society, people, they keep their word. Whereas these days in Kali Yuga, it's very hard for people to keep their word. Like that. Even amongst devotees, it can be difficult for people to keep their word. But actually, it is a sign of a cultured person. So what are we seeing? We're seeing in this chapter, Vritrasura is showing a very high level of consciousness of an Aryan, or a cultured person. As compared to the demons, the Asuras, they're not so cultured. And even the demigods don't act in such a cultured way. And Vritrasura chastises them in this chapter also. He said, you're supposed to be the devas, you're supposed to be the good people, the qualified people, and you're attacking them while they're running in the opposite direction. So what sort of men are you? He's not a qualified person. So the more qualified that we become, the more people will have faith in our movement. So it means we have to learn to keep our word. We have to keep our promises. We have to show the highest level of human behavior and culture and relationship. Please come. I saved you a chair. Where is your good husband? He's on the plane?
Germany.
Where is he going to?
Going to Germany. And
he's always going somewhere. I think you are the steady one in the family. You're not flying here and there. You're staying here and just listening to Bhagavad talks. And where's your big Tulsi? Thank you for coming. So, such a good example, isn't she? Comes every time. Such a good example. We have to follow these kind of examples. So, in the cultured society, these things are there. And in ISKCON will become successful when we show these kind of examples. When people can have unflinching trust in us. Not just in a select few, not just the gurus and the maharajas, but all the devotees in this time. When they can show this kind of character and quality, then the public will develop faith. Otherwise their faith becomes destroyed. You see amongst the devotees, amongst our community, our society in ISKCON, so many times, and since Prabhupada left the planet, the devotees did things, leaders did things, and people lost their faith. Right? And even now, you know, devotees do things and don't act properly, then people lose their faith. We lose our faith in each other, and the public loses faith in us, and our movement becomes weak. But when the integrity is very strong in the society, the movement becomes very powerful, and people develop deep faith in us. So in the second paragraph, Prabhupada speaks about the children. So what does he say about the children? What should they become? Yeah, they should become glorious heroes. So our children should also become like that. They should become first-class devotees. Srila Prabhupada himself said they are Vaikuntha children, which means they are from Vaikuntha. which means they are very advanced devotees, even though a lot of the time they behave like monkeys. I'm not looking at anyone. There's so many of them here. But they're very advanced devotees, actually. And Prabhupada was very affectionate to the children. You see in the videos in the pastimes, even all the big men were there, but Prabhupada would let the children come in the front, and he would give them all cookies, like that, from his own hand, like that. So the children are very special, and they should be protected, and they should be made into first-class devotees. And they should become heroes, actually. They should become the next generation of preachers in Krishna consciousness. They should become great preachers. Just like there was one child, she used to come here. And what was her name? She had some parents. What were their names? Prem Dharma, do you know? What was her name?
Ananya.
Oh, Ananya. So, Ananya. You remember Ananya? So I saw her, they showed me a video one time, she was giving Bhagavatam class. So she's sitting on the asana and she's giving a very good class, actually. She was asked, quoting shlokas. It was a very good class. It was a coherent class. She was quoting shlokas and doing all these things. And at the end she said, any questions? And then devotees were asking questions and she answered the questions. And in the end she goes, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. So I'm hoping that when she gets old, she will still keep this enthusiasm. Children have the enthusiasm when they're young. Chandra Balabhi Mataji has been running the kids program for many, many years. And now other devotees are doing it also. So the children are learning so much. They're getting a very good grounding in Krishna consciousness. But the whole point of that training is when they become adults, they will become the leaders and the preachers in our society. That is the best. That is the first class example. And you see there are examples in our society. Like Chandrasekhar Prabhu. You saw he came. My godbrother. He was here last year. Yeah. He's the GBC for China. Like that. So he's there. He was a guru guru. Now he's a leader in our movement. Sri Prahlad Prabhu. Went all the way through the Gurukul system. Now he's a world acharya in Kirtan. So many devotees are doing like that. So that is the first class. If we can make many of our children like that, then that was Prabhupada's desire, actually. Prabhupada's desire the children would become like first class. It doesn't always happen, but that is the best if it can happen. It's up to them at the end of the day. You can do everything, but it's up to them. If they choose Krishna, that's up to them, that's their choice. But you have to give them every opportunity, and hopefully they will make that choice. Okay, so. Any points?
Regarding the vow, we have an interesting story, historical story, when Alexander attacked India. His wife knew that maybe Alexander is going to lose the war, so therefore she approaches Purushottama, I think, the king's name. And she said that there is a culture in your country that whosoever takes the Rakhi, then she gets a boon, or she's taken as a brother. So therefore, she ties the Rakhi to the king and takes the vow, saying that in case Alexander is going to meet with him, that he's not going to kill the husband. So therefore, the king gives the oath without knowing that who her husband is. And then when she finally reveals that it's none other than Alexander, he says, that's fine, I'm going to keep up my vow. And in the battle, I believe, it did happen that he took his sword, and then he was about to kill Alexander, but then he saw the Rakhi on his hand, and then he stopped. He dropped his sword, and then he was arrested.
Yeah, this was the system. Cultured people. You see in the Mahabharata, there's so many examples of that. Like Karna, right? Even when it was revealed to him, Krishna himself was riding in the chariot with Karna, and he said, actually, Yudhishthira and the other boys, they're your brothers. And he said, if you come now to them, he said, they will put you on the throne, and they will worship you, and they will stand behind you, like that. But he said, I will not give up my vow to Duryodhana, because I took the vow to him. That's how powerful. And he said at the end of the battle, there will still be five Pandavas. Five brothers will still be living. Either I will die or Arjuna will die. So many examples of that. Any other points?
You see that running away from battlefields is abominable, but whatever the Lord does is always glorified. So we know the pastime of Lord Krishna, how he ran away from the battlefield, but there is a whole pastime and he is glorified as Ranchur. So he was running away from the battlefield and he was fighting with Sarasana and everything. And just that there is a temple of Ranchur.
I'm doubtful whether all vows should be followed, because there was one story that actually Krishna narrated, I don't know whether it was to Arjuna or someone else, but he said there was one sage who gave a vow, he will always speak the truth. And some dacoits, they were chasing some people, and the sage saw where they were hiding. And when the dacoits came and asked the sage, did you see where they are? And he said, yes, I saw them, they are there, because he gave the vow of truthfulness. And then the dacoits went there and they killed them. And Krishna told to this person, this actually sage is going to go to hell because of that. So we
it's
have to know the purpose behind the vow. So
so there's somewhere in the Manu Samhita, there's something like five reasons when you can not tell the truth.
Yeah.
It's written. There are examples.
But we were talking about the vows because he said, I'm going to speak the truth all the time, always. And
it,
because of the
maybe,
vows he gave, he followed it and then...
Maybe he didn't read the Manu Samhita. Because there are situations where you're allowed to lie.
You can blind him to perform a marriage.
Is that what happened to you? there are some samples where you can lie like that. I can't remember what they are, but there are some. To save someone's life like that, there's certain things you can do which are written associated. So most of the time you just have to use common sense. Just use common sense. Obviously, you know, if it's someone's life is in danger, and then if you say the truth and they will die, then obviously you tell a lie. Like that. So, but you have to, you know, if someone does some research, you might be able to find these things. I think it's in my sense. Any other points?
Typically, I think for a Kshatriya, we say that it's the Vijayamo Virasargamo. Either you are victorious or you die in the battlefield, and therefore you gain the highest rank.
That's the best. Okay. Oh, insignificant demigods, if you truly have faith in your heroism, if you have patience in the cause of your hearts, and if you are not ambitious for sense gratification, please stand before me for a moment. So, she wrote a poem.
The rebuke of the demigods with personal challenge. O demigods, if you are actually heroes, stand before me now and try to show your prowess. If you do not wish to fight, if you are afraid of losing your lives, I shall not kill you. For unlike you, I am not so evil-minded as to kill persons who are neither heroic nor willing to fight. If you have faith in your heroism, please stand before me.
Any points?
There are so nice points after the clear etiquette of the battlefield, like they are fearful, you should not kill them, that will not come to your life. Very nice Ritrasura telling in the section of Bhagavad Gita. What is dharmic kind of
proper behavior.
I was listening to one lecture today, and it was the lecture was glorifying Dhritarashtra and said that Dhritarashtra knew he was going to die. He knew that the thunderbolt had been made from the deity's bones and he knew what the outcome is. But still, the beauty of a Kshatriya is to fight, and therefore he kept fighting till the end. He did not just sit and say, okay, kill me because I know as it is I'm going to die. So we have taught
performances they will do and or till the end, and then only to guide.
Typically, we find in those days they would fight with equals only, not with unequals. Like for example, in the Mahabharata war, almost at the end of the war, Duryodhana comes out of the water where he was hiding. He said he was resting, and Yudhishthira Maharaj asked him, "Pick up one of us, and if you are victorious with us, then the kingdom will be given back to you." Duryodhana could have chosen Nakul or Sahadev or Arjuna or even Yudhishthira to fight, but he said, "No, you are all cowards. You are not equal to me. There's only one person amongst you with whom I can fight, is Bhimsen." So therefore, he throws the mace and says that you pick it up and we both will fight, not with Bhimsen. So they always believe in that it's only to fight with equal people, not with others.
And they made the rules on the first day of the battle. When they made the rules, they said equals will only fight with equals. Like that. Except the Kauravas broke that promise with Abhimanyu. Like that. And that's one of the reasons why they lost the battle. So Vritrasura, then he is, in this verse, he's saying to the demigods, if you are really heroes, then just stand and face me. Because he said that you are chasing the demons who are running away. But that's not what Kshatriyas do. Kshatriyas will stand and they will fight with the opponent. So he said, if you're really Kshatriyas, you won't be scared to die. But these demons, they're running away, they're scared to die. Actually, he says to the demons first, turn around and come back. That's your duty. But they keep running, they don't listen to him. And the demigods are chasing him. He says, that's not your duty either. He says, just come and fight with me. If you die, then it's good for you. You'll get a glorious destination. And if you kill me, it'll be even more glorious because you killed me. Like that. So he's teaching them what is the actual etiquette in the battlefield. So next time you're on the battlefield, you know what to do. It's good training because you don't know what's going to happen in Kali Yuga. At some point in time, there will be a war between devotees and non-devotees. At some point in time. But it might not happen for hundreds of years yet, but there will be a war in the future between devotees and non-devotees. We may not see it in our lifetime, but, or we might see it in our lifetime. So study this chapter. This chapter is very important because you don't know what you'll have to do.
Once Bhaktabhu was also mentioning the same point in his Bhagavatam class, he was saying right now it's a peace time, and peace time is for the preparation. So tomorrow there will be a war. So you should prepare yourself during the peace time. As the soldiers prepare themselves for the war during the peace time, so it's a duty to get ready with the devotional service and everything, because there will be a difficult time coming.
That's why a teacher is doing karate classes. Are you ready? Do you have your black belt yet? Keep studying. Shukadev Goswami said, Vritrasura, the angry and most powerful hero, terrified the demigods with his stout and strongly built body. When he roared with a resounding voice, nearly all living entities fainted. So his body was so big and so powerful. You remember in the third canto, it says when Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha were born, then they stood as tall as the clouds. And their bodies were like steel. So Vritrasura is also like that. He's extremely large and extremely powerful. Just looking at him, everyone's fearful. It's hard to be a Kshatriya when there's someone who's like 100 meters high is looking at you. Like that. So even the demigods are scared. He's so big.
At their level, don't they have the ability to stretch their bodies? Because whether it's a demon or anyone, they have that ability to shrink in their size or to increase in their size.
Yeah. When all the demigods heard Vritrasura's tumultuous roar, which resembled that of a lion, they fainted and fell to the ground as if struck by thunderbolts. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that at this point in time he is slapping his thighs. Like that. So if he slaps his thigh, the noise is so powerful, the demigods faint. That's how big this demon is. Right? So powerful, he just slaps his thigh, and everyone's so scared. Like that. Okay, just imagine how big this person is. Hopefully one day they'll make a movie. And we'll have prasad and popcorn. And we'll all go and sit in golf class. We'll watch this. It'll be amazing to watch this. We have to keep preaching until someone makes these movies. Then we can all go and watch these movies. Then we can use the theatre for what it's meant for. You know, it's meant to watch Krishna conscious DVDs.
Who said this movie?
What's that?
Who said
this? Me.
No, he was
slapping his thighs. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. It's in the commentary. Okay, you're welcome. As the demigods closed their eyes in fear, Vritrasura, taking up his trident and making the earth tremble with his great strength, trampled the demigods beneath his feet on the battlefield the way a mad elephant tramples hollow bamboos in the forest. Seeing Vritrasura's disposition, Indra, the king of heaven, became intolerant and threw at him one of his great clubs, which are extremely difficult to counteract. However, as the club flew toward him, Vritrasura easily caught it with his left hand. This is a great insult. To a Kshatriya. Kshatriya gets one of his best weapons, his clubs, and he throws it with all of his strength. And with the left hand, you don't even use the left hand usually. The left hand, he just grabs it as it comes towards him like that. This is also done, similar thing was done in the Mahabharata, when the Pandavas were after the House of Luck had burned down. And one time the Pandavas were going in the evening time, they were looking for a place to stay. And they came towards one river, and the Gandharvas were there. They were taking bath in the river. And the Gandharva, the king of the Gandharvas, he looked and he said, "Who is that?" You know, and they were walking with a torch. Arjuna was in the front. And he was holding a torch like a flame, so to see where they were going. And the Gandharva, he saw that someone was coming, he became very angry. And he said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "This is not the place for humans at this time of the day, of the evening." He said, "The humans come in the day." He said, "At night time is for the Gandharvas." So he took one of his celestial arrows and he fired them at Arjuna. And Arjuna just had the torch, you know, not even a weapon, just like a stick with fire on it. And he just moved the arrows as they came at him, like celestial arrows flying at him, and he just moved them away like this. So when he saw that, when this Gandharva, he saw that, he said, "Who are you?" And he said, "I'm Arjuna, I'm the son of Indra," like that. So then they became friends at that time, and the Gandharva gave him different benedictions at that time. This is very powerful, you know, someone throws something at you and you just catch it with your left hand, like that. The person becomes completely terrified. Just makes him feel insignificant. That's how powerful this ritual is.
I believe that club was very powerful club. It was not an ordinary one. It was a very powerful one. That's why Indra, he thinks that, like, you know, oh, this powerful club itself was contracted, then how can this thunderbolt work? He loses this thing, but later on, the Ritrasura will encourage him. You know, we should. And though, what will definitely work, because it's empowered by the Lord and also the Rishi Muni's austerity, so it is made up of, it's very powerful. So it's very powerful club, this one, this is not throws, and he very easily catches it with the left hand.
But it doesn't say that this club was made from the bones.
No, the lightning bolt, the thunderbolt is made from the bones.
But this one was one of the great.
Was what?
It says that it was one of the great clubs.
This was a great club.
Not the greatest.
Not the greatest?
The greatest one was the one that was made from the bones.
Yeah.
So this
one was very good. This one was quite nice.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, very good. Fuck that. O King Pariksit, the power of Richasura, the enemy of King Indra, angrily struck the head of Indra's elephant with that club, making a tumultuous sound on the battlefield. For this heroic deed, the soldiers on both sides glorified him. Struck with the club by Richasura, like a mountain struck by a thunderbolt, the elephant, Airavata, feeling great pain and spitting blood from its broken mouth, was pushed back 14 yards in great distress. The elephant fell with Indra on its back. So he catches the club with the left hand, and then he just hits the elephant like that. So this is Airavata, who came out of the churning of the milk ocean, which you'll hear about later when we'll Bhagavatam, the 8th canto. This is not an ordinary elephant, has 10 trunks. It's like the king of all the elephants, like that. And this elephant is extremely powerful, is feared all over the universe. If this elephant comes into the battle, right, everyone becomes terrified by this elephant. And with his left hand, he just gets the club and just smashes the elephant. That's how powerful this thing is. Just pushes the elephant flying back. And the elephant collapses on the ground, actually. It hits so hard, blood comes on the man, and he falls on the ground. And when Indra sees that, he thinks now there's no hope.
That's a very good circumstance.
Yeah, there's a picture in the middle of the Bhagavatam of the elephant falling down, which is sort of like, we're waiting for the movie to come. Okay. When he saw Indra's carrier elephant thus fatigued and injured, and when he saw Indra morose, because his carrier had been harmed in that way, the great soul, Richasura, following religious principles, refrained from again striking Indra with the club. Taking this opportunity, Indra touched the elephant with his nectar-producing hand, thus relieving the animal's pain and curing its injuries. Then the elephant and Indra both stood silently. So Airavata was wounded, so Indra just touched him like that, and he became healed. His wound was healed, and he stood up again and had his full power once again. Describes in Mahabharata that each day after the battle, everyone would come back to the core of the camp, and they would have many wounds from arrows and different weapons. And then Bhishma would take herbs, Ayurvedic herbs, and he would put them on their wounds and chant some mantras. And in the morning, they would wake up and they'd have full strength, and the wounds would be completely healed. So even on this planet, it has happened in the past. In the higher planets, the demigods just touch you, and then everything becomes back to full strength once again. All these things are there in the world.
It's called pranic healing.
What is that?
It's called pranic healing.
Pranic healing, yeah. Only demigods can do it. Say it again.
Everyone can do it.
Only demigods and Croatians. Where's she from?
I'm from Croatia. She's from Macedonia.
Only demigods and Croatians in Macedonia.
That's Croatia.
And those Macedonians who are staying in the temple.
Okay. I come to this class just for the entertainment. Such an entertaining group of people. It's worth driving for an hour and a half just to... O King, when the great hero of Richasura saw Indra, his enemy, the killer of his brother, standing before him with a thunderbolt in his hand, desiring to fight, Richasura remembered how Indra had cruelly killed his brother. Thinking of Indra's sinful activities, he became mad with lamentation and forgetfulness. Laughing sarcastically, he spoke as follows. Sri Richasura said, "He who has killed a Brahmana, he who has killed his spiritual master, indeed, he who has killed my brother, is now by good fortune standing before me face to face as my enemy. O most abominable one, when I pierce your stone-like heart with my trident, I shall be freed from my debt to my brother. Krishna Rupa.
Ah, okay.
Second group.
They consider him, because he was a priest, they consider him spiritual master as well.
Yeah.
It's interesting how it says Sri in the past.
Sri. Because he's a pure devotee.
I think Sri represents opulence.
Sri represents the blessings of the goddess of fortune. So a pure devotee will have like Srila Prabhupada.
We say that Sri Bhagavan will watch, or we don't say Bhagavan will watch. Bhagavan is the world which is addressed to even Atma and other exalted devotees, but Sri Bhagavan is only addressed to the Bhagavan.
No, not like that, because we say Sri Narada. So.
Yes.
Pure devotees have that part, Srila Prabhupada, Sri Narada. Prabhupada writes all the way through, but it says Sri Narada.
So His Holiness Maharaj is trying to translate Srila, the one who is dear to Srila Radharani. So the Sri is translating to Srila Radharani. And the love behind Sri, Srila is one who is very dear to Srila Radharani.
Only for the sake of living in the heavenly planets, you cured my elder brother, a self-realized, sinless, qualified brahmana who had been appointed your chief priest. He was your spiritual master, but although you entrusted him with the performance of your sacrifice, you later mercilessly severed his head from his body, the way one butchers an animal. So this is the comparison which is going to be made in this pastime in this chapter. That Indra is acting for material motivations. His motives are material. And Prabhupada points this out, and we'll see in the next few purports. Prabhupada points out that he's a devotee, but his desires are material.
Sakama.
Yeah, sakama. So it means that he is worshipping Krishna, but he is worshipping Krishna to get material things. Whereas Vritrasura, in contrast, appears to be a demon, but actually, he is only praying to Krishna for spiritual benediction. Whereas Indra is not as great a devotee, because although being a devotee and apparently a demigod, as opposed to an asura, but still his motivation, Indra's motivation is simply material things. And Prabhupada says later in the purport that he's just left to rot in this material world. Whereas Vritrasura goes to the spiritual world.
Brahma didn't know what Vishwarupa was like. Because
he didn't have a demon, and he advised Indra to accept Vishwarupa. So, Brahma didn't know what Vishwarupa was like. Maybe. I mean, there's no comment on what Brahma thought, but Brahma may have understood what was going to happen. He may have understood this whole pastime was going to take place. So.
But actually, Brahma says, then actually when Brahma tells them to approach Vishwarupa, at that time Brahma will tell that he is related to both the sides. Prashta, some Vishwarupa, go and approach him, but he is related from both the sides. Rachana is the mother of this Vishwarupa, and father is Prashta. So he is related through demigods to Prashta and Rachana through the demons like that. So that he will inform that, share in the previous chapter.
It wouldn't have been as exciting. Okay. Only for the sake of living in the heavenly planets, you killed my elder brother. Did I read that?
Yeah.
Excellent. Indra, you are bereft of all shame, mercy, glory, and good fortune. Deprived of these qualities by the reactions of your fruitive activities, you are to be condemned even by the man-eaters, Rakshasas. Now I shall pierce your body with my trident, and after you die with great pain, even fire will not touch you. Only the vultures will eat your body. You are naturally cruel, If the other demigods, unaware of my prowess, follow you by attacking me with raised weapons, I shall sever their heads with this sharp trident. With those heads I shall perform a sacrifice to Vairava and other leaders of the ghosts, along with their hordes. But if in this battle you cut off my head with your thunderbolt and kill my soldiers, O Indra, O great hero, I shall take great pleasure in offering my body to other living entities, such as jackals and vultures. I shall thus be relieved of my obligations to the reactions of my karma, and my fortune will be to receive the dust from the lotus feet of the great devotee's life, Narad Muni.
Sri Narasimha Das Thakura says, Echaya Gosani Yara Muidhara Dasa Tan Sabhara Tadha Rema Mora Pancha Grasa. I am the servant of the six Goswamis, and the dust of their lotus feet provides me five kinds of food. A Vaishnava always desires the dust of the lotus feet of previous Acharyas and Vaishnavas. Vritasura was certain that he would be killed in the battle with Indra. Because this was desire of the Lord Vishnu, he was prepared for death because he knew that after his death he was destined to return home, back home to Godhead. This is a great destination and it is achieved by the grace of the Vaishnava. Chaida Vaishnava Seva Nishtara Payachya Kava. No one has ever gone back to Godhead without being favored by Vaishnava. In this verse, therefore, we find the words Mana Vinam Kada Raja Prapashtya. I shall receive the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees. The word Manas Vinam refers to great devotees who always think of Krishna. They are always peaceful, thinking of Krishna, and therefore they are called Dhira. The best example of such a devotee is Narada Muni. If one receives the dust of the lotus feet of a Manas Vinam, a great devotee, he certainly returns home back to Godhead.
What are the interesting points? What is it?
There are some potent items which are mentioned. The water which has washed the feet of the devotee.
We'll discuss that. That's something that we'll mention in this conversation. So. Any other points?
What is mentioned at the end that are we fortunate to receive the rest of after he dies? He's actually talking that after he dies, he offers his body to the jackals, and then we'll be fortunate to receive the rest.
Well, he's meaning in the spiritual world at this point. He's talking about going back and becoming a servant of the Vaishnavas. In another verse, in a few verses, where he speaks even more directly. So, Prabhupada mentions in the songbook of the Vaishnava Charyas, in the one of the songs, it might be Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, or I can't remember which song it is. But then Prabhupada comments that the whole process of Krishna consciousness is to keep association with pure devotees and to take shelter of the previous acharyas. So that's our entire philosophy.
I think Shuddha Bhakta
Chaitanya. No, it's not that. No. It's one of the songs, I just can't remember which one it is, but it's in there. So that's our entire process. Our entire process is to take shelter of pure devotees. Who are pure devotees? Tamal Krishnamurti said to Prabhupada in 1968 on the morning walk, I believe in San Francisco, he said to Srila Prabhupada, how many pure devotees are there on the planet? Srila Prabhupada said, how many devotees are there in this one? So all the devotees in ISKCON are pure devotees.
Yes.
And then Prabhupada gave the example of a ripe mango and an unripe mango. So yeah, it just means in due course of time the devotees will be completely pure. Even if they're not completely pure now, still they are valuable. Just like with the unripe mango, you can make pickle. So there is some benefit there. And in the future, when the mango is ripe, then you have ripe mango, which is the king of all the fruits. Like that. So either way, the devotees are pure devotees. Either they're pure devotees or they'll become pure devotees. Like that. So our whole process is to just to keep association with pure devotees and to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. That's our entire process in Krishna consciousness. You simply have to do these two things. Stay in the association of devotees and worship the previous acharyas, and you'll become completely perfect in your Krishna consciousness. Then Srila Prabhupada points out that a devotee accepts whatever is Krishna's desire. So if Richasura is going to die, so he accepts that. That is Krishna's desire. So for the devotee, if we're going to die, and we accept that is Krishna's desire. Just like his holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami, when he found out he had some problem with the body, he tried to solve it, tried to cure himself, but then when he realized that he could not be cured, then he accepted, now that is Krishna's desire. So if Krishna desires that you will leave, then you accept that, devotees accept that. Krishna has a plan. So whatever Krishna's plan is, then we have to learn to accept that plan. If he wants us to live, we will live. If he wants us to die, we will die. That's Krishna's plan. Then Prabhupada points out that in order to attain success in Krishna consciousness, we have to be blessed by the Vaishnavas. So you'll see it's interesting actually, at the very end of Prabhupada's pastimes in 1977, he began to beg forgiveness for all of his god brothers. Whenever they came to visit him, he would say, please forgive me if I've committed any offences. He said that in my enthusiasm to preach Krishna consciousness, sometimes I said things which may not have been appropriate to you. So please forgive me now. So Prabhupada, he would always say that. Whenever the God brothers would come and visit him, he would beg forgiveness from them. And Srila Narayan Maharaj, he came to visit Prabhupada. Now, he wasn't Prabhupada's God brother, he was Prabhupada's God nephew. Some of Prabhupada's God brothers were there, and they said, Prabhupada said, please forgive me. And Srila Narayan Maharaj, he says that there's no offense. He said, you are our guru, there's no offense. But Prabhupada was feeling like that. That in order to attain perfection, he needed the blessings of the Vaishnavas. So we should also feel like that. To become perfect in Krishna consciousness, we need to be blessed by all the devotees. So don't wait until you're about to die. Go and ask forgiveness for your offenses now. Go to the devotees and say, please forgive me. If there's any offense, please forgive me. Don't wait till you're going to die. If you're too proud, then you'll be forced to beg forgiveness later on. Better to do it now, though. Like that. So then, there are three very auspicious items mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which will give you perfection in Krishna consciousness. One is the dust from the lotus feet of the devotees. One is the water, which has washed the lotus feet of the devotees. And the other is the remnants of the food, which has been taken by the devotees. So you see in Chaitanya Charitamrita there are examples where the devotees would try to get these things. The one devotee, Lord Chaitanya, before he entered the Jagannath Mandir, outside on the steps, then his servant, Govinda Das, they would bathe his feet. And Lord Chaitanya would put his feet out and they would bathe his feet. And then Kala Krishna Das, one devotee, he came and he, as the water was running off the step, he would catch it and he would drink it. And he drank it three times. And Lord Chaitanya said, he went to take it a fourth time. Lord Chaitanya said, that is enough. So Lord Chaitanya, ordinarily, he would not let anyone drink the water from his that had washed his feet. Normally he would not allow. But for this devotee, Kala Krishna Das, He let him take it three times. So we should try to get that water. Not easy to get. You can get it from the spiritual master. Sometimes the spiritual master will allow you to wash his feet. Then you can take it. You sprinkle it on the head of all the devotees. You see, even when Krishna, when Narada entered into Dwarka, then Krishna got off his simhasan, put Narada on his seat, bathed his feet, right, and then took the water and put it on the head of all the family members, like that. So that is the system. Right? If we're fortunate, then we take that water on our heads and we drink that water. Also in Chaitanya Charitamrita is an example of one devotee. He would offer very nice mangoes and other fruits to the devotees, and then they would offer to their deities, and then they would take the prasad, and then they would put the prasad in the rubbish area, and then he would come and he would take the remnants of the devotees. What was his name?
Kalakrishna.
Was that him?
Allowed him to drink water because he valued the remnants of other devotees.
Same devotee. Okay, so Kalakrishna does. He would take the remnants of all the Vaishnavas. So that should also be unmoved. Not easy to get the remnants of the devotees.
Went
to
someone's house and
he gifted the mangoes and when they threw the seeds out, he went and ate those seeds.
He said he took the remnants of every devotee in Bengal. Like that. So that should be unmoved. It's not easy to get, but you should try to get the remnants. So you get the remnants, get the water, and try to get the dust of the lotus feet. So it says that when Pundarik Vijayanidhi came to visit Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then Swarup Damodar, who was Lord Chaitanya's secretary, and Pundarik Vijayanidhi, who was an exalted devotee, then they would offer obeisances to each other, and when they stood up, they would both try to get the dust from each other's feet. And because they were both very strong, they would wrestle each other. And Lord Chaitanya would laugh seeing them trying to get the dust. Because neither of them could get the dust at the other's foot. Because they were so strong, they were wrestling with each other, trying to get the dust. So Lord Chaitanya, but this is the move. We should try to get the dust at the lotus feet. So that's also difficult to get. Although Koti Prabhu is very good. He gets it. He got he got all the devotees to touch my feet one time, like that. Because I was sitting in the brahmachari ashram taking prasad, and then he grabbed me from behind. And then they all grabbed and they lifted up. Cody's very strong. I'm very strong, but Cody's very strong. So he got me. I wasn't very impressed with him, but I tried to break out, but he's very strong, Cody. Maybe one day I'll get him back. And then, what's that the point? Okay. So then, if you want to get the dust of the lotus feet of the devotees, what is the best way? Shoes. So you just before the class starts, you just go out there, you can put your head on all the different pairs of shoes. You can take as much dust as you like. But one thing is that you should not embarrass the Vaishnavas like that. Do not embarrass them like that. So don't, you know, if they don't want you to take the remnants, then don't take the remnants in front of them. Do like Kalakrishna did. You know, somehow get it around the back of the house. When they threw out the plates out the back, then he would go around the back. Or the dust, you take it from the shoes. Don't embarrass the devotees. Or the foot water, you know. You don't grab the devotees and then bathe their feet and then, you know, put the water on their head. Somehow, if you can get it, you get it. But you also have to be respectful to the devotees. And you should get their permission. If they don't get permission, then you have to be a little bit sneaky. But you should be respectful towards them. Any points?
So usually, when every day, what I do is I can't ask somebody to do that. So what I do, that float, every all the devotees, they chant in the morning, then they walk. I just do like that and put it in Vrindavan in the morning. So many nice devotees will chant, so yeah, take the dust every day, even before, just before I leave, morning Mangala Arati, we go to take flight, even that time I take so much dust and go on. That's the only way to get the dust on that.
Yeah, see the devotees in the holy dung, the old widows, they lay on the ground and then they roll their whole body over back and forth. So they get all the dust like that.
Yeah. Probably
somebody told me that if you want to have the remnant, you must ask the permission.
Yeah, that's the etiquette.
But you can't have it without.
No, you should not take, just like some devotees, they just take it straight from the plate. Even one time, like Prabhu Vishnu Prabhu, he was taking prasad, and the devotees were serving, and then someone came in to give a message, gave a letter or something, and then Maharaj said, okay, just put it there, and the devotee sat there and he put his hand out and he went... And Maharaj just, he looked at us and he just said, oh my God. He said, oh my God, and he just got something, he just put it on his hand and just like, go. But that's not the etiquette like that. You should not do like that.
No, I mean to say after he has finished.
Yeah, after he's finished,
mm-hmm.
then if there's anything is left,
yes.
then you should beg permission. May I take the remnants?
What if it's not there?
What's that?
What if that you come in the
Vaishnava
is not there?
If he's not there,
mm-hmm.
then you can take it. No problem.
Yeah?
Yeah, it says that the... spiritual master will leave remnants for the disciples. Spiritual master will leave remnants for the disciples. But it says others should not leave remnants.
Okay.
So the spiritual master will leave remnants. Even one time we were serving Tamal Krishna, I was up in New Govardhan, and one of my god sisters, she wasn't a very good cook, and she made some cookies for him. So he took the cookie, and he said, these are the kind of things you leave as remnants. So then we got remnants. We didn't care. He was very fun. Some of them did so. And then one time I was serving him, just here in this room, just here, I was serving him. And I was just putting on his plate. I gave him like 3 spoons. And I wasn't thinking anything. I was just putting 3 spoons there. And when I put the 3rd spoon, he said, hey, he said, you're just being greedy for remnants. You know, because he thought I was just giving him too much. So then I think, oh, good, and then I'll get remnants like that. I wasn't doing that, but that's once again, I keep saying this, when you serve the devotees, so they come to your house, you give them as much as they want. Not what you want. What they want. Like, you have to learn these points. Very subtle points, but you have to learn these points. Because that's the difference between A and B plus. B plus is okay, that's good, you're serving nicely, but A is a little bit higher. We should be A grade devotees, like that, not B plus devotees. That's why you keep getting B plus on your exams. Monday you'll get A, but you have to understand those points. That's why I come to your place for prasad, to check if you've become B plus or A.
The Vaishnavas who give the remnants, do they get any
reactions? Yeah, you shouldn't give. It says that you should not leave remnants. There are statements which says you should not leave remnants. Like that. Only the guru, it says the guru can leave remnants to the disciples, that's all. But you should not leave remnants.
Well, what are the consequences?
You'll become proud. You'll develop pratishtha in your heart.
No, but other than that, in terms of consciousness or karma?
Then if you're not qualified, then the point is the devotee should not feel qualified. The person who's taking the remnants, he feels that it is mercy that he's getting the remnants. But we should not feel qualified. It would not be good for our bhakti.
In the
Padma
Purana, there is a statement that every grain of prasad is left. So if you go to the ISKCON temple, you know, in Sri Tirupati Dham, so there in the prasadam hall they will display this statement. If you really look at the plates of, you know, all the Vaishnavas who have taken the prasadam, it is like they are the wash plates. You won't even find a single grain there.
That should be the standard.
The word is someone is really hungry and you already started to eat and they're looking all the time in your plate. What is supposed to do? Keep
keep eating, not giving them, or it's really sometimes strange. We have already started eating, and you know they're hungry.
I don't have so much problem with that at this temple, because there's always so much prasad there.
But not here, I'm saying for the circumstances.
Yeah, maybe if it's a very rare circumstance, then.
It's not because you are honoring, giving them and honoring them with your rent, but because they're hungry.
Yeah. And see what's practical. Sometimes you have to be practical, that's the point. Okay. So
see, why I asked Prabhupada, because see, there was a plate and Maharaj had eaten in there, and somebody gave that plate to me, and there was some prasad and little bit.
Then what did you do?
So there was nobody there, so I had to clean it.
Oh, Mataji.
So I thought I ate it.
Really?
Yes. So is it a simple thing?
I don't know. You have to ask God. I think you're okay. No. If it's a sannyasi or a guru, then no problem.
Oh, that's good.
No problem.
Not my guru.
Now you can be peaceful. So now I'm going to finish the chapter, so please don't ask any more questions. We're just going to read through. O Indra, King of Heaven, the thunderbolt you carry to kill me has been empowered by the prowess of Lord Vishnu and the strength of Dadichi's austerities. Since you have come here to kill me in accordance with Lord Vishnu's order, there is no doubt that I shall be killed by the release of your thunderbolt. Lord Vishnu has sided with you. Therefore your victory, opulence and all good qualities are assured. By the force of your thunderbolt, I shall be freed of material bondage and shall give up this body and this world of material desires. Fixing my mind upon the lotus feet of Lord Sankarsana, I shall attain the destination of such great sages as Narad Muni, just as Lord Sankarsana has said. Persons who fully surrender at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always think of his lotus feet are accepted and recognized by the Lord as his own personal assistants or servants. The Lord never bestows upon such servants the brilliant opulences of the upper, lower and middle planetary systems of this material world. When one possesses material opulence in any of these three divisions of the universe, his possessions naturally increase his enmity, anxiety, mental agitation, pride and belligerence. Thus one goes through much endeavor to increase and maintain his possessions, and he suffers great unhappiness when he loses them. Our Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, forbids his devotees to endeavor uselessly for religion, economic development, sense gratification, and mobile phones. Throw it out the window. Prima Torandini Rata. O Indra, one can thus infer how kind the Lord is. Such mercy is obtainable only by unalloyed devotees, not by persons who aspire for material gains. Now this verse is very important. So you understand. This verse is a... Throw it out the window. Just open the window. Hey, Krishna, just open the window and just throw it out. I don't need it in here. Okay. So this verse, number 24, is a verse which shows us an example of pure devotional consciousness. This is pure devotional service. Same as in Shikshastika. And the same type of verse. Which is there. O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes, my words always glorify those attributes, and my body always engage in the loving service of your Lordship. So Gopi Bhatu, Pada Kamalyo, Das, Das, Anadasa, So it means to become a servant of the servant of the servant of the Vaishnavas. That is our philosophy. With our mind, our body, and our words. That is sannyas. So this is pure devotional service. Mind, body, and words in the service of the servants of Krishna's devotees. That's our entire philosophy. So if you just understand this verse in the Bhagavad Gita, you'll become a pure devotee. O my Lord, source of all opportunities, I do not desire to enjoy in Dhruvaloka, the heavenly planets, or the planet where Lord Brahma resides. Nor do I want to be the supreme ruler of all the earthly planets or the lower planetary systems. I do not desire to be a master of the powers of mystic yoga. Nor do I want liberation if I have to give up your lotus feet. O lotus-eyed Lord, as baby birds that have not yet developed their wings always look for their mother to return and feed them, as small calves tied with ropes await anxiously the time of milking, when they will be allowed to drink the milk of their mothers, or as a morose wife whose husband is away from home always longs for him to return and satisfy her in all respects, I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service unto you. So Rupa Goswami says that it's one price to attain Krishna consciousness. Loyam. Or lopa. Lopa means greed. So this is what the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us. If you want to become Krishna conscious, it means that that is the only thing that you want, is to become Krishna conscious. As long as you want other things, you cannot become Krishna conscious.
Actually, in the lectures of Brijan Prabhu on this verse, very nicely reads a commentary from somewhere. Very, very interesting, Brijan Prabhu's theory on this verse.
Why don't you find out what the commentary is?
Mm-hmm. I will write it.
Okay. Try to find it.
Yeah.
Oh my Lord, my Master, I am wandering throughout this world, this material world, as a result of my fruitive activities. Therefore, I simply seek friendship in the association of your pious and enlightened devotees. My attachment to my body, wife, children, and home is continuing by the spell of your external energy. But I wish to be attached to them no longer. Let my mind, my consciousness, and everything I have be attached only unto you. So this verse is an example of pure humility. When a devotee becomes advanced, he becomes humble. Actually, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it is stated by Sanatana Goswami that dainya, or humility, and prema, or love of God, are completely synonymous. You can't have one without the other. Genuine humility and love of God coupled together eternally. So when one is a pure devotee, he will feel pure humility. Not the kind of humility we have. Our humility is very much, what does Kadambakanand Swami call it? Super glue humility. We walk around all the time. Yeah, our hands are like a super glue in them. Yeah, devotees walking around all the time. Not that. It's not real humility or pure humility. Some humility is there, but it's not pure humility. Pure humility is a different thing. Okay? So, love of God means when one has love of God, he has pure humility. It's like you see in Srila Prabhupada. He had love of God, and he also had pure humility. Is that what I'm saying? Srila Prabhupada ki?
Yeah. Yeah.